Welcome to this episode of the WorkXO Culture Chat Podcast, where we explore the intersection of workplace culture and the future of work. We feature progressive leaders who intentionally manage their cultures so that you might also experience the power of doing the same. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Culture Chat Podcast. So glad to have you guys back. So glad today to have Mr. Steve Brown, longtime HR exec leader, a leader for both obviously the organization and organizations he's worked with, but also in the industry at large, the industry of human resources, the profession of human resources, the specialization of human resources, his commitment to the community, to our profession is evidenced in a number of ways. And what I love most about what he's going to share with us today is all of that comes with this tremendous level of intention. Intention, commitment, dedication plays out so importantly, not just in our profession, but everything that really we really do in the workplace. And I think human resources professionals ought to be really the drivers of that intent, more visibly, more vocally, and glad that Steve is going to tell us more about how he's done that in his life. He's an author. He's in the trenches practicing HR every day. Real deal. Steve, welcome. Tell us a little bit more about yourselves before we get started, as we always do, with the one big question of the day.
Hi, Charlie. How are you? Thanks for having me, man. This is cool. It's good to catch up with you.
You bet, man. I'm always, always glad to be connected with you, and I'll be the first to admit that we do not do it enough. So I'm looking forward to this very much.
Granted, you wanted to know a little bit more about me for your audience. I am a crazy, wild, passionate HR person, intentionally, almost too much so, probably. this is all I've done my entire career in all kinds of different industries, and right now I work for a phenomenal company. La Rosa's Incorporated, where I'm the VP of HR and doing big moving things for the culture and being intentional with our people.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And you're SHRM board member. Talk just a second about that.
Yeah, I've been a SHRM volunteer leader for almost 20 years now. And 3 years ago, I got elected to be on the board of directors, which is amazing because I sit on the table with other movers and shakers in the HR world. The difference probably between myself and one other person on the board is we've been involved with the organization as well as the profession. So it's great to be able to sit in a room to help shape where SHRM's going to go and hopefully that they represent the profession well. So I love it. It's a great role. And I get to serve at least one more year and hopefully three. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, well, we all hope that it's at least three, four more. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're at all in the HR space, I'm sure you know of Steve Brown. He would never say this, but he's an HR celebrity. He's got a blog, and you ought to follow that. He's just written a book, and I think we're gonna not just, but it's out there, and it's gaining a lot of attention, and I hope we'll have a chance to at least allude to that a couple times. And I've watched him, man. You are so committed to this profession. It's rare that you see organizations, associations like SHRM, really find people like you who have since day one been committed to this profession and gotten to this point where you're now really helping this organization, this profession, frankly, evolve and continue to succeed. So our hats off to you for that, Steve. Really glad again to have you here. Let's, as we always do, just kind of kick this off with just the one question. And you've used this word already, intentional, which I just think is increasingly important when we talk about people and when we talk about culture and when we talk about workplaces, period. You know, just this notion of getting and staying intentional about how we're caring and feeding for the workplace. And you, of all people, really, really live and breathe that. So I'd like to talk about your attention to and kind of your own experience with just developing a deliberate people passion, like being, staying deliberate about that passion. What does that mean? What does that look like? How does that live and breathe? And maybe even how can people start thinking about them, about that themselves? Let's just start there.
Oh, I appreciate that. I think it's, for me, a little more natural than I think others, but I think it's necessary. And I don't think it's quantified or rests just in HR, but we have the best opportunity to use it and use it well. I believe in modeling the behavior you expect in others. And what's interesting is I've been this kind of person, I hope, for the majority of my career. One, when I worked for a company where I was allowed to do that and expected to do that. And then I also hit a few places where I tried this and it didn't work well. It's not a question of senior management getting on board. It's a matter of what does the organization think of its people. And if the organization says, you know, they're pegs on a wall or numbers on a chart, no amount of effort or intentionality will ever break through that. And I'm no longer there at those places either. What does it mean? To me, it differentiates a company from one from another. When you're more intentional with your people, you have an opportunity to really dive in and practice organizational development, learning, caring, nurturing, all kinds of things that people talk about in books and on blogs and at conferences. But when you get to practice it every day, it's a whole different thing. The challenge is it's doing HR individually instead of collectively. Mm. This is against the entire profession, to be honest. Or the industry. We tend to think collectively works, and it never has. In fact, not to be really awful, but a lot of collective movements have ruined us in many different ways. There were good initiatives or theories, total quality, self-directed work teams, all kinds of great stuff, but we tried to do it in large, massive movements. You can't do it. You can't sustain it. To be intentional, you have to do this every day, every day, every day, and it's messy and wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I love the juxtaposition of messy and wonderful. I mean, if there's anything that, I mean, if you picked like two words to describe the workplace, maybe those are the two words.
I think they are.
Messy and wonderful. So I want to like just go back to a couple things that you've said and ask you to expound a little bit. I mean, part of getting intentional for an HR professional is being intentional about joining an organization that's willing to be intentional about its people. Because I think you hit on something really important. There are some organizations that just frankly are there to pay lip service and will always be that way. And if you can find those organizations and you want to be intentional about people, just don't waste your time, right? Just because as you said, Steve, it's kind of a losing battle. How do you identify that? Like what are the clues? What were the things that gave you kind of the, you know, the comfort that La Rosa's, for instance, was one of those places?
One of my favorite things when I came here is I interviewed with the entire leadership team except one person, and I'll tell you that story in a second. But for those people that don't know me, I'm a big toy person. Have all kinds of just crazy stuff in my office because it just gives me energy and it gives me motivation to be creative and reminders that things shouldn't be stagnant. So I have a magic eight ball. I have a lava lamp and I have a Galileo thermometer, and I had them all before I came here. And when I came here, I went by people's offices and I saw magic eight balls and Galileo thermometers and lava lamps. And I'm like, what is this? And I went, huh. So it was more seeing parts of the fabric of the culture visually and visibly. It was past the posters on the wall and the mission statement on the wall and the values on the wall. I think every company has those. You have to look for the fabric of what's at people's desks, what's allowed, what's not allowed. Do you see differences in how people have their personal space? If you see that and there's variety, there's a good breeding ground that you can do things differently. if everything looks the same and everything is cold, stark, or chaotic. It doesn't, it's not one or the other. If there's more conformity, run.
Right. Well, unless you're one of those people that just thrives in those kinds of environments. And
oh, sure.
There are plenty of them, right?
Sure. And yeah, I think if you fit that, I'll come back to my CEO story in just a sec because of his view of HR, and it really was very telling. But a great company here locally in Cincinnati called Cintas that does uniforms and
sure.
And stuff, first aid product stuff. They do all kinds of stuff. The thing that's interesting is if you work there, it's a uniform company, you wear the uniforms. And if you don't want to wear the uniforms, don't work there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I agree with you. It works in some environments. We're a pizzeria. We're a family. And families, again, messy and wonderful. The CEO was the only person, the CEO at the time, was the only person who didn't interview me. My first day here, I was walking around with my boss, the COO, and we introduced ourselves. And I said, hey, nice to meet you. And he's a legend in town. And he says, do you know why I didn't interview you? I said, no. And he says, I hate HR. I'm like, fantastic.
Nice to know.
And he says, I hate HR the way we were doing it. He's one of these guys who likes to hit you hard and then move around it. He's brilliant. I love him. He's a big Myers-Briggs person. And so he says, so what type are you? And I said, oh, do you want to know my Myers-Briggs? And I just started going toe-to-toe with him because it's who I am. kind of match the environment you're in. And I said, oh, you want to know my Myers-Briggs? Well, I'm an ENFP. And he goes, oh, great. And I said, what's that all about? He says, well, you'll never hold anybody accountable. And I said, I will hold people accountable. I'll just be nicer than you are. And he lost it, laughed his head off. And he tells that story around the country now to people that he works with. But I had to be intentional with him, not to discredit his beliefs or his leadership or his style, but to hear where he's coming from and meet him where he's at and then engage him where he's at. We are tighter than ever. But that happened on the first day I was here.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And it validated the culture a lot. I knew it was a breeding ground to do good things.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love this idea of artifacts, kind of paying attention to the signals, like what can you pick up on? What's the vibe that you're getting? I always say that maybe I've said this on other podcasts, but I apologize if I have, that we spend far too much time interviewing candidates and not enough time allowing candidates to interview us. And, it's great if you can just even walk the halls and kind of get that sense. I love the Myers-Briggs. I'm pretty sure I'm an ENFP as well. I might be an ENFP. Jay, but I'm pretty sure I'm an ENFP. It's been a while since I've done it. The other thing I want to touch back on is this kind of individual versus the collective. I just think it's so crucial. This idea of the workforce of one, which by the way is a great book. If you ever can pick it up, I think the author is Susan Cantrell, who's with Accenture. But it is about the need to kind of customize and get down to that individual level when crafting an experience. There's certainly things that you need to have at the collective level in an organization, but at the personal level, talk to me more, Steve, about how you guys are doing that, how you do it, or how you think about making sure that you're protecting the individual, at the expense of, or I guess at the preservation of the collective as well.
I think the challenge I saw, Charlie, was that when we took a collective approach, more people were actually ignored and avoided than the individual approach because the systems are, they're consistent, they're objective, they work, they are not fraught with personality. They're good, practical, operational systems, both from HR and operations and finance and marketing, all of the functions within the company. Solid. We have great business practices. The challenge is every person who gets that business practice will do it differently, even if they're told it to the same instructions. And what I think has been challenging is I'm in my new development effort with our GMs is I ask them what their focus is, what message they hear from the company. And they say results, drive results, drive results, drive results, which is true. and we need to. And I say, so how do you do that? They go, through processes. I'm like, oh, fantastic. Sounds like you get it. I said, where do you spend your day? What do you focus on during your entire day? They said, people. And I said, well, gee, they're missing from your system. So my challenge and my opportunity at the same time is to teach them how to deal and work with people well, treat them as humans, not the H and HR, all that crap. It's the, you know, teach them how to work with individuals on a situational basis, to teach them how to use the phenomenal business practices we have and see how our results improve. Instead of saying most organizations are results first, to me that's backwards and behind because results have already occurred. So you're trying to run an organization from the past, even though you say you're forward thinking. I think you drive the behavior of people through the good business practices and change the business practices if you need to. And when you hit the results, they will drive themselves. We're in its infancy. We're 2 months in, and already we're seeing a huge difference. And I'll give you a quick example. My first takeaway after our development meeting was I told the GMs that they had to say hi to every one of their team members, everyone, even the ones they don't like, and thank them for coming into work for 30 days. And they said, that's it. I go, that's it. I said, you won't do it, but let's give it a shot. Half of the 13 did it. And they said, my entire culture is changing. And that's just being intentional. Very simple, very bottom shelf. Say hello. Thank me for coming in.
Yeah.
This month is to do it 30 more days and now have everybody on their management team say hi to every team member and thank them for coming in. Now, when the company go, this is stupid. We are wasting our time. I'm like, I know you're right. And already we're seeing changes.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to unpack here, and it speaks so clearly to, I think, the way that we talk about, we here at WorkXO talk about culture and managing it. And I want to highlight a couple things. People as a system, like that's a really important concept for us to get our arms around. I think some people are scared by that because it feels mechanical, but it's not. I mean, I suppose it can be, but how you do it has and how you execute on it has everything to do with how it functions and how it's received and so on and so forth. And intentional doesn't have to mean mechanical, right? I mean, it could be authentic. That conversation, that hello, maybe it feels a little bit mechanical at the front end because it's not necessarily natural. It's not muscle memory yet. You're just kind of doing it. But over time, right, it grows into something that's much more authentic, something that's heartfelt. My guess is that your managers, those leaders, will get to a place where it feels unnatural for them not to say that.
You know? That's my hope. And I know it works. And you're right. There is some mechanical parts to this, but repetition works. It's been proven over time. That's a terrible pun.
No, it's great. I love it. It's true. I mean,
repetition works. And it's like any behavior, any hobby, any habit. There's science, all kinds of science that says, you know, repetition, repetition, repetition. The challenge, the difference is, instead of making it punitive or mandatory, you make it accessible and approachable. And on the people side, if you make things accessible and approachable, you can do almost anything. If you make it punitive and mandatory, which most HR functions still do, and most organizations expect, it fails. And it fails gloriously. I would rather take the chance to say, hey, I know this is uncomfortable before you, but give it a chance. And then I allow for grace. If somebody says, hey, I'm not going to do this, you go, okay, well, what's stopping you from doing this? And I say, well, I really don't like people. Well, cool. Then let's have you work somewhere else.
Yeah, let's find you another gig.
Right. So, but you can't have those conversations when you throw systems in front of people. You can have those conversations when you teach them behaviors and expectations.
Behaviors, so important. You give it a chance. Like that's what you said, give it a chance. I think that's crucial. We chase stuff. Like we chase solutions and shiny objects and good ideas, and there are no shortage of them. But we rarely see them through. Like we rarely take the time. We give up too early. Some of these things take, I mean, it takes time to see results. Like you can't, you don't flip switches in workforces. You just can't. And so that's another real, I think, big takeaway for me is that as it relates to intention or deliberate becoming a deliberate, like you got to give it time. You got to stay at it. Repetition. We're going to keep doing this until we know it's working or it's not working. But just because it feels uncomfortable doesn't mean it's not working. In fact,
right.
It probably is working, or at least it's the first good sign if it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, I want to have people uncomfortable because uncomfortable people are alert. Mm. Uncomfortable people are observant. Uncomfortable people don't go through the motions because I don't want them edgy and hoppy.
right.
But I want them to not just take things for granted because we just slog through our day. You're going to have days like that. So giving people tools that are tangible, realistic, within reach is a lot different way to do this. It's funny when I talk to our peers, Charlie, they're like, you're freaking crazy. This will never work. And I go, all right, I'll take that bet. And you know what? I'm not going to lose. The things you're struggling with are the things I'm willing to address.
Well, and here's the other thing about this is, you know, is this working or not working? I mean, I think this also ties to this kind of collective versus the individual. I would argue that if this makes a difference to one or two or part of your organization, then it's working. Like it doesn't have to make a difference to everybody, but then again, we're not necessarily looking for practices or solutions that are gonna work for everybody. At least we shouldn't be, because they probably won't, right? So I like this kind of, this maybe isn't the right term, but you're kind of hacking at it, you know? Like let's just try this.
Right.
Let's see what works.
I think the idea, it's interesting. There's so much out there about innovation.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk about experimentation.
Yes.
Innovation.
Which leads to innovation, right?
Yeah. Innovation is, you know, the wild, crazy idea. Let's invent Uber. that's, geez, okay. Instead of saying, hey, let's try this and see what happens. The big things I'm putting into the vernacular here, the vocabulary, is people are a continuum and so is business. We have to quit doing start, stop, heavy goal, heavy result. It's a continuum. You can have big, hairy things within there, but it's always moving. So as soon as you get done, you breathe, you cheer, you hit the next thing and keep moving.
Take the first step.
Right.
And take the next step.
Right. But quit looking for it to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is really crucial. This for any HR leader out there that wants to get excited about some of the stuff that Steve is talking about, some of the stuff, and I'm happy to talk to you about this as well. Go do a little bit of reading on agile software development. Go read about the Scrum process. Go read about how we build technology today. I think it could give you some clues on how to do the kinds of things that we're talking about, moving the needle one step at a time, continuous delivery. Let's not let good get in the way of perfect. You know, we're going to make mistakes, but we're going to experiment and we're going to be cool with that and we're going to keep moving it. So, and to be clear, I mean, you know, Steve brought forth a really, really simple example, and he's got many from where that came. And some of them obviously are much more programmatic and bigger and strategic, but I love the fact that the example he shared was just this little kind of simple one. Start simple. That's where we need to go. I'm conscious of the time, both for you and our audience sake. I want to make sure that I get a couple things from you. One, I do want you to say a few words about your book, and that'll be the second part of this. The first part of this kind of closing is we're lucky to have you and your point of view as it relates to the profession on this call. What are the one or two things that HR professionals really need to be focused on right now if they're thinking about the future of work, if they're thinking about continuing to excel in their own trade and their own profession? And maybe that's a really tough, difficult question for you to answer. But I'd love to just get your perspective on it.
I think one of the things is going to sound, again, more simplified, but I think as a profession, we need to be more genuine and authentic We can't keep asking people to be genuine and authentic if we're not genuine and authentic ourselves. And HR has to drop the veil and just be people that happen to practice HR. That's a huge first step. The second part is, if HR is not integrated as part of the entire fabric of the departmentally and from the executive level, the C-suite down to the receptionist, we won't exist. We can't be silos that happen to be support. And I'll give you a really quick example. We just changed our strategy as a company to be pizzeria focused because that's where our business occurs. That's where our revenue is generated, all kinds of things. And so we put the pizzerias in a circle in the middle and then every other function on the outside. In the past, we said, well, we are here to support you. And I said, no, we need to be resources for people. I really think that we need to get out of the support business as HR. Both mentally and in practice, we need to be resources, just like purchasing needs to be resources, logistics need to be resources, ops needs to be resources. It's not our title within whatever HR is supposed to be called. We're here to make the business run. That's our role. And if we don't, they should get rid of us.
Amen. Remove the veil and
be integrated.
Be integrated, be the support, be the resource, be the driver of the business. Thanks for that. A few words about your book, man.
The book's called HR on Purpose. It is a collection of stories and practical ways to do HR in a positive way where people can own who they are and what they do and work towards things like integrating into the business, practice individually, and other great things. It's gotten incredible response, very positive response. My favorite thing that I've heard is this. People have read it and said, I believe in what I do again. I was starting to lose interest and becoming burnt out, but because I read this, I can keep going and I'm good with that.
That's remarkable. And I'm sure terribly rewarding for somebody who I know put your heart and soul into this book, and it's certainly reflected, and it does come from not only real life experience, but a whole lot of authenticity, and nobody does that better than Steve. I think I'm right in saying that it was so Society for Human Resources Management just had their annual conference here in Chicago back in June, and I think I'm right in saying it was the best seller at that conference. Is that right, Steve?
It was the best seller. It sold out. Sold out for the second time on Amazon. It's already been named a number one bestseller on Amazon when it first came out, which is crazy for HR and business books. And it continues to do well. From what I've been told, it's the highest seller Sherm has ever had. I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure by a book that they published for themselves.
All right. Well, man,
it resonates. And as long as it resonates, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm so proud of you. I'm so glad that you're a beacon for the profession, and I'm glad that you've had a chance to share some of your good stuff, albeit in a very short 25 minutes or so with this audience. Please find Steve out there in the sociosphere. Steve, maybe just one or two words around how people can find you and connect.
Two best ways to find me are on Twitter. I'm very active and would love to connect with you. My Twitter handle is at sbrownhr. That's sbrownhr. And then LinkedIn. I would love to connect with you because I can get you connected to the HR community locally and globally. And I will.
He will indeed. Steve, I can't thank you enough. Thanks everybody else for listening to another edition to the Culture Chat podcast. And we will talk to you soon.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe so you won't miss our regular programming. Forward-thinking organizations use WorkExo's culture-fueled people analytics to optimize their workforce. And they out-recruit, out-engage, and outperform their competition every single day. Learn more about our cloud-based culture management platform at www.workexo.com. Thanks again.